Okay, good morning, everybody.
If I could ask you please to turn off your phones. I'm sorry we're in a rather hot room. I'll try and not get you too overexcited by the sources. I might fail because actually I think it's a really interesting set of sources today. But I apologize, it's a little bit hot. But Baruch Hashem, at least there's some kind of air conditioning and some kind of fans, and it'll be what it is. If I could thank our sponsors for the Shiurim, our regular sponsor for the whole of 2023. The Shiurim is sponsored anonymously, Le'ilu Nishmois, Brandenburg Branded, and Zelig Ben Kalman. We're very grateful for that. And especially for today, I want to thank Miriam for the sponsorship for the Shiur. I kind of feel now that I mark the years by Miriam's sponsorship for this Shiur. In memory of her beloved mother, Liba Pesha Bas Nachum, who passed away, the Shiva was on Tisha B'Av. She passed away just before Tisha B'Av, right? On the Zion Av. And her grandfather, Nachman Ben Moshe, on his 68th Yortzeit. There is never a point at which we stop, you know, remembering Yortzeits. That's actually on Tisha B'Av. It should be an aliyah for their neshamas, and we're very grateful, Miriam, thank you. And if I could also dedicate the shiur for Refuah Shleima to a good friend of ours who's just had a major operation, it should be Refuah for Yeshua Tzvi Ben Tamar, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, now, we have something very exciting to talk about today. This is the end of our series on food. I thought Rosh Chodesh Av, I'll talk about meat. If you can't eat it, you can at least learn about it. Okay?
So we will be able to eat it.
Is it para? We'll see. Cultivated meat. Now, first of all, what is cultivated meat? First of all, it has many names, and the names say a lot about the marketing. Some people call it cultured meat. That sounds a little bit more European, maybe. Lab-based meat. Cell-based meat. In vitro meat. Slaughter-free meat. That's going to be more for the kind of the activists. Genetically modified meat, which I don't think is going to go down very well. But then the word that they seem to be using now is clean meat. That's going to be good for the marketing. Clean meat. They talk about all of these things. So I brought you on the front page an up-to-date summary of where the technology is. It basically works like this. There is a big problem in the world today. We consume 350 million tons of meat every year. That's 72 billion animals and birds, a lot of them are birds, that are slaughtered every year for human consumption. Now, I'm not a vegetarian, so I'm not trying to take a moral stance, but that's a lot of animals. And the UN has estimated that global meat consumption will increase by 73%. By 2050, largely because a lot of people in India and China who lived for millennia on vegetarian or less meaty diets are now becoming more Western. Breeding cattle to feed all those people, we're going to be hundreds and hundreds of billions of cattle and birds. And even as early as 1931, let's start the show with a source from Winston Churchill. He wrote, quotes, "We shall escape the absurdity of growing a whole chicken in order to eat the breast or the wing by growing these parts separately under a suitable medium." Prescient of good old Winnie. And actually, it's been projected that by 2040, 35% of the meat that we eat will be this cultivated meat, which we're going to talk about. And another 35% will be the kind of veggie, plant-based alternatives, which no doubt at some point will actually taste like real meat as opposed to veggie burgers. And there are all sorts of ethical reasons why this may be helpful as well. There is a real question of cruelty to animals. No question, that's a major ethical issue and a hashkafish issue too. A lot of the animals which are kept for rearing for meat are kept under atrocious conditions. There's a benefit for the environment. Genetically modified, clean, cultivated meat, whatever you want to call it, there's a 90% reduction in the amount of land it takes, the amount of carbon footprints, etc. There may be health benefits. Okay, you may say, well, I don't want to eat this stuff till they can convince me that it's not going to turn me into Frankenstein. Okay, that's one thing. But there's a lot of issues with meat that we will be able to avoid. Growth hormones that are in the meat, antibiotic resistance because of the antibiotics that are pushed into all the meat, all the different diseases that can be spread through regular meat, the fat content of meat, which can be regulated much more with cultivated meat. So there are a lot of potential health benefits and also cost benefits. Kosher meat is very expensive. It can be double or more the price of regular meat. And one of the reasons for that is that we only use 20% of the animal. because most of the hindquarters almost always are sent away because we don't porch the meat. We have to take out the gid hanasha, we take out all the suet. A large number of the animals are rejected because they're not glad. And therefore, a lot of the meat that we shecht, a lot of the animals that we shecht, is just goes not to waste, it's sold on, but still it does make kosher meat much more expensive. So there are lots of reasons why we might be quite in favor of this. The way that it works is basically as follows. You take a cell, and we'll see in a minute where the cell comes from an animal, a meat cell, it doesn't have to be a meat cell, it could be some kind of stem cell, we'll talk about where that's from, and then you cultivate it. I brought here, look in the middle of page one, in the middle, how is cultivated meat made? And this now, there are billions of dollars of industry invested in this. This is big potential profits. The manufacturing process begins with the acquiring and banking stem cells from an animal. These cells are then grown in bioreactors, known colloquially as cultivators, at high densities and volumes. Similar to what happens inside an animal's body, the cells are fed an oxygen-rich cell culture medium made up of basic nutrients, such as amino acids, glucose, vitamins, and inorganic salts, and supplemented with growth factors and other proteins. Changes in the medium composition, often in tandem with cues from a scaffolding structure, meaning they build the cells on a tiny little 3D model, trigger immature cells to differentiate into skeletal muscle fat and connective tissues that make up meat. The differentiated cells are then harvested, prepared, and packaged into final products. The process is expected to take between 2 and 8 weeks. That's quite quick. Depending on what kind of meat is being cultivated, some companies are pursuing a similar strategy to create milk and other animal products. For example, if you're partial to foie gras, but feel that it's produced in a way which is extremely immoral and unethical, so maybe they can take the goose livers and just cultivate them, and, you know, hey presto, no goose had to suffer in order for you to eat your pâté de foie gras, which the French will be very happy about. I'm not sure how bothered they are about the geese anyway, but that's a separate issue. So we talked about the benefits as well, but we need to talk about the halachic side of things. And this is a real prospect. 2040 is not very far away. When this was initially platformed in 2013, so it was a bit of a gimmick, but they brought out a beef burger made from cultivated meat that cost $300,000 to make. And somebody funded it and then ate it with great relish or whatever. I hope they didn't put ketchup on it. That seems to be a bit of a waste. But now, of course, the cost of a burger has come right down. Now it costs about $10 to make a burger, which is already just a touch too expensive. But eventually it'll come down and down and down. So we have, as Jews, lots of interesting shilas about all of this. And if you turn to page two in the middle, let's look at some of them. First of all, hashkafically, we're delighted that there might be an opportunity to reduce Tzar Balei Chaim. Tzar Balei Chaim is a real question for us, and we're not happy about the way the animals in the world are treated. And Rav Kook, who we'll talk about at the end, saw the world as progressing towards a more ethical future by stopping killing animals. We'll get to that at the end. Isn't there also a concept that we looked at a couple of weeks ago? Surely there must be a kosher equivalent for every non-kosher taste. We saw there's a Gemara that says that. So if you're really chalishing for cheeseburgers or a side of pork or ham or whatever it is, there must be a way, surely, of growing this or making this which is kosher. The question is, is it okay if it also looks like a cheeseburger and tastes like a cheeseburger and feels like a cheeseburger or a piece of ham or whatever it is? Is that still okay or not? We'll get to that. But I'm more interested today about in the halachic stuff. Number one, if we take the cell from a non-kosher animal, which we'll see is quite likely, does that mean it's kosher or not kosher? If we grow more cells from one treif cell, are they all treif or are they not treif? That's going to be one question. Will it be fleishik if it's kosher? That's going to be another question. What about issues of basar min achai? We're going to talk about that in a minute. Even if we say it's kosher... No, I mean basar min achai. We'll talk about that in a minute. What if we decide it's parav and it's kosher? Will it be maris ayin? It looks like a burger, tastes like a burger, feels like a burger. People are going to say, well, you're eating burgers... but if everybody's eating, etc. Agav, in the industry out there, with all these rabbis talking to them about it, what did they want it to be? Fleishik or parav? Fleishik. They don't care that you're fleishik and you wait 6 hours. They just don't want it to be seen as non-meat. They want it to be fleishik. So the industry wants cultivated meat to be fleishik. So we'll see which way the rabbonim go. Okay, fine. Let's start at the very beginning. When is meat really meat? Okay? And we're going to start with a few sources that are slightly, agadic? let's say. We'll see if we can use them and if they're relevant. Let's start at the bottom of page 2. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara actually there is talking about Adam HaRishon and says that Adam HaRishon was a vegetarian. And it seems from the Psukim that he was a vegetarian. But then he brings a Midrash and says that there's a Midrash that says the Malachim brought meat down from Shamaim and roasted it and served it to Adam HaRishon. From which the Gemara says, so you see, he wasn't a vegetarian. So the Gemara then says, does meat come down from Shamayim? And brings this story. Number 2. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta have a ka'azel ba'orcha. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta was walking on the way, on the road. Pagabo hanachari vasa. And 2 lions jumped out. Lions were quite, you know, common. I don't think they're like Simba type lions, but like, you know, in Israel was a place where there were big cats. Until the Middle Ages, the Havakanam Ilape, and they were roaring at him, and they were going to eat him or kill him or whatever. So Amma, he says a quick posuk. Oh, you have to have this psukim handy if you're ever going to meet a lion on the road. Hakfirim Shaygim Lataref. Okay, that the lions are roaring for their prayer, if they pray, and the end of that posuk is, but God will give them their food. That's the end of the posuk. Often when the Gemara quotes a posuk, the bit that you really want is the bit that it doesn't quote, but it assumes you know the rest end of the posuk. So what happens? The chisule tati atmasa, 2 big thighs, big sides of meat, fall down from Shamayim. Okay? Baruch Hashem. Chada achlua, one of them the lions ate up and they went away happy. The chada shavku, one of them they left behind. So he picked it up. So Esi va'asa le Beit Midrash, he brought it to the Beit Midrash. Boy, and he told them the story and he asked about it. Davar tami who's there? Or davar tar? Is this meat kosher or not? It fell down from the sky. So they said to him, Amrulei, Ein davar tami yored min hashamayim. If it came from the sky, it must be kosher. Nothing treif comes down from the sky. Okay, beautiful. But is it meat? Sounds like it's meat. Sounds like it is meat. Boy minei Rabbi Zera mi Rabbi Abau. So Rabbi Zera separately asked Rabbi Abau, Yard eloy d'mus chamor ma. What if something that looks like a donkey fell down from shamayim? Is that kosher? So Amalei, they said to him, Yarod Nala, you screaming bird, you. It's not, it's like a mild kind of rebuke. Like what a stupid question. Ha'amra, don't you know, Ein Davar Tami Yorod Min HaShamayim? Which means either, of course it's not kosher, because, you know, it's a donkey, and a donkey can't come, it couldn't happen, a donkey is never going to fall from Shamayim. Or it might be saying, of course it's kosher, if it's a donkey from Shamayim, it's a kosher donkey. Either way, they weren't happy with the question. But where does that leave us? So meat that comes from a heaven is meat, or is not meat? It sounds like it's kosher, but is it really meat? So have a look here in number 3. So go over the page. Of course, our meat, cultivated meat, is not falling down from Shamayim. It's not miraculous. So even if we decide that miraculous meat is not meat, that may not apply to us. But we need to go on a little bit. Number 3. Amar Abaya. Hilchot kshafim ki hilchot shabbat. If you ever want to learn the laws of witchcraft, just realize that they're parallel to the laws of Shabbat. In case you wanted to know. Yesh mehem beskila. Some of them you get the death penalty for, just like in Shabbat. V'yesh mehem patur aval asur. Some of them are exempted, but they're rabbinically prohibited. V'yesh mehem mutar lechatchila. And some of them are actually permitted. Okay, good to know. Mutar lechatchila. What are the ones that are permitted? K'de Rav Chanin v'Rav Oshaya. Just like Rav Chanin and Rav Oshaya used to do, kol male shabsa, every Friday, havu ka'ask behilchas yitzira, they would use the sefer yitzira, the mystical, we would say today, Kabbalistic sefer yitzira, Umivrilahu igla tilsa, and they create a choice calf. An igla tilsa is either, you know, the third born or a third grown. Meaning they'd make this supernatural calf, which was for Shabbos. The achlile, and then they'd eat it for Shabbos. That's what they used to do on Friday afternoon. I always imagine their wives are actually making the chicken soup and cleaning the house and getting the kids ready. But they're making an igla tilsa. They're making this calf. And Rashi said they did it by using, why is it mutter? They use the Sefer Yitzira, they use the letters that make up Hashem's name, through which Hashem created the world, and they manipulated it to make this calf. So, good, very nice. But is it meat? The Shlach says, it's not a real calf. It doesn't even need shechita. It's not a regular cow. It's a miraculous cow. It's not meat. And in fact, you'd say, well, is this relevant in any way? So I brought you here in the Pisrei Tshuva, they bring this Shlo. So look in number 4. It says, B'Shlo, He brings the Shnei Luchot Tzabrit, which of course is a mystical source, Kabbalistic source. If you make a cow through the Sefer Yetzirah, like we find in the Gemara, and he brings that case, you can even eat it while it's alive. Okay, I'm not saying you should, but you could. And in fact, that's the explanation of the Midrash. Shehevi Yosef Dibasamra. Remember, Rashi brings down that Yosef brought a Lashon Hara about the Shvatim. What did he say about them? He said they're eating Eva Minachai. He says this is what they were eating. Okay, what were they doing? Ki Yosef Sava Shehi Behema Gemura. Yosef thought it was a regular animal. They were kind of pulling bits off, but it really wasn't. It was a golem. It was a golem cow. But okay, maybe you need midrabanan, you need to shecht it because of maris ha'ayin, because people were, because you see from Yosef's story, it didn't end well. By the way, I saw the Shla also brings down that there are three things he said about them. One of the things he said is they were eating Eva Minachai. Another one is they were acting inappropriately with women. So the Shla brings down, just like the cow that they were interacting with was a golem cow. So it says the woman they were interacting with was a golem woman as well. Okay, I don't know how far we want to take that, but okay, a golemet. Okay, whatever, fine. So,
what's a golem? What's that word? A golem
cow? A golem. A golem as in like the golem, you know, like the Malaral of Prague. A golem, I don't know how you pronounce it. When I was a kid, they used to call it, because I grew up in a very Lithuanian Yiddish pronunciation, they used to call me all the time a galem. There'd be a galem. So I didn't ever associate a galem with the golem, but you know, whatever. So the galem and the golem, like an inanimate, you know, Frankenstein's monster, basically. Fine. Anyway, so let's leave the golemim to the side for now. Actually, I brought you the Malbim. The Malbim says, and that's the cow that Avram Avinu served when he served it with milk. Here's another answer. Like 101 answers to how Avram Avinu served fleishiks and milchiks. Here's another one. He made a cow which was parav through Sefer Yetzirah. But now you're seeing interesting things. That mystical, magical meat is parav. It's not meat and it's parav because it's not fleishik. So is that going to help us in our case? We'll see. It is brought down in some of the halakhic sources as well. If you look at number 6, the Cheshik Shlomo, who was the Dayan of Vilna in the 19th century, he says, "Vadada b'shar behema shenivra al yedei sef yitzirah." Basar behema. If you have meat which was made in this magical way, mutzal levashel b'chalav, you are allowed to cook it with milk. De'ein lo din basar klal. It is not meat at all. And he brings down the Malbim as well. So this may have, even in those days, some halachic, maybe not practical application, but they brought it down. Okay, there's one other Gemara we need to learn. Number 7. Boy Rabbi Zeira, chitin sheyardu ba'avim, wheat that fell down from the clouds. Mahu, what is the halacha? What's the status of this wheat? Lamai, what am I asking about? Ila menachot, if I want to bring this meat as a mincha offering, I want to grind it into flour and bring it in the mikdash as a mincha offering. Am I allowed? Then what's wrong with it? It's fine. Of course it's fine. It's wheat. Ela l'shtei halechem mai, but would it work for the shtei halechem on Shavuos? Why? Because it's a special din. Because mimoshvoy seichem amarachmano. The Torah says that the flour for the shtei alechem has to come from where you live. Laafuki the chutz laaretz deloy, which means it can't come from chutz laaretz. Meaning you can take flour from Canada and bring it as a mincha offering, but you can't take flour from Canada and bring it as the shtei alechem. Aval da'avim shabidaber, but maybe flour from the clouds is fine because that's where you live. Or Dilma Mimeshvay Sechem Davka, or maybe it has to be Davka where you live, Vafilu Da'avim Namelon. You don't live in the clouds, and therefore it's no good. So, what am I interested in here? So, Rashi says, where did this wheat come from? So, Rashi gives a very down to earth understanding. Okay, number 8. Shiyardu Ba'avim, Im Hamatari, came down with the rain. Kushishasu Ha'avim, but Okeanos, there was a storm. There was a tornado over the ocean. Balus Fina, so it sucked up a boat. And it was full of grain. And that's a natural phenomenon. That happens. It doesn't happen very often, but it sucks up something and it drops it over the land. Yeah.
This meat you're talking about is a cow, the golem.
Yeah.
They use it
for Corban. No, it's not meat. Presumably not. No? Yes.
What about man?
Oh, we get to man. Okay. We get to man. So this wheat, so Tosfos, comes along and disagrees with Rashi. Rashi's pshat is very kind of straightforward. Of course it's wheat. The only shaila is it coming from the right place? Tosfos says, no, I think this is magical wheat. Look at number 9, it says at the top. Ela nirali, the end of number 9. Da'al yidei neis yardu ba'avim. It came down from the clouds as a miracle. Kihanu amhatsa la'ab tatsa, just like those bits of meat that fell down with the lions. It came as a miracle. And it is wheat. Here we definitively say you can definitely bring it for the korbanos. It's real wheat. So you see, wheat that comes down from the clouds really is wheat. And one of the proofs the Sfas Emes brings is the man lechem min hashamayim. It's described as lechem min hashamayim. It's lechem that comes from heaven. Agav, the Ramah Mifano says, what's the brocha? Hamotzi lechem, hamorid lechem min hashamayim. Okay. Fine, that's not probably
but
a practical.
But then it's not from where you live anymore.
Right. Okay. But that's true. That's not from where you live. But they won't bring korbanos there. Okay. So where does that leave us? That leaves us with some sources that seem to say that magical meat is not meat, and some sources that seem to say that magical wheat is yes wheat. So are any of these sources even relevant to us at all? Because nothing here is magical. It's all A, normal and natural. We just have the technology to make it. And B, who says we can even learn from these sources? They're midrashim. We gave a whole shiur about whether you can or can't learn from midrashim. The normal situation is no. But it's not black and white entirely. And there are cases where we do learn from midrashim. And in fact, I brought you some early voices on this. Rav Herschel Schechter, looking number 11 here. This was from a few years back when this first started being discussed. So number 11. B'sicha ima Rav Tzvi Schechter. So this is brought down by Dr. Chanuch Kahn. In Adar Tafshin Ayin Bet. When's that? 2012. When this was first being discussed. Hivira Rav Schechter Sheledata. He said to me that the data, in his view, basar hu rak davar shemekoru mibal chai. Basar is only if it comes from an actual animal. Shenoilad me'aim derech b'derech hateva. An animal has to be born from a mother, b'derech hateva. And kol basa shemiyutzar, therefore meat which is produced, cultivated, b'derech acheret, einu basar, le'inyan hilchatiyim, le'inyan hilchatiyim. So Rav Schechter said, I'm not just learning from these magical sources. It's just not meat. Meat means an animal, and it means the animal was born, and this is not born, and it's not meat, and therefore he's saying it's parav. Whether it's kosher, we'll see. But it's he paskened eventually that it's parav, although the OU are not paskening that way, to the delight of the cultivated meat industry. And I brought down other people as well. Rav Reisman said, looking number 12, there was a whole sikhsuch, a whole back and forth in Tchumim. Tchumim is a journal brought out by Tzomet every year, and they have articles in Hebrew on contemporary halachic issues. And in edition 35, they had a whole, and 36, excuse me, sorry, 34 and 35, they had a whole back and forth. And one of the contributors there, Rabbi Tzvi Reisman, number 12, says, Le'inyaneinu, Yitzerat basa me'abada, b'ma'abada, making meat in a lab, mitageze, from one of these cells, ain't a nace. Okay, it's not a nace, I agree with you. Ach barur, shehabasa lo notzar b'derech harikila. It's not made in the normal way. Sheban nivru kol ba'alei achaim is basically what Rav Schechter said. This is a yitzira. This is a completely synthetic product. And now sit al yidei tarovet yidei adam. It's made by people. Ve'yeshlid musa lebriya al yidei sefer yitzira. I think it's like something that was made by sefer yitzira. All that those Gemaras were saying is, if you have manufactured, cultivated, synthetic products which are not the real thing, then they're not the real thing. You could have made it from a nace, you could have made it from a safe yitzira, you could have made it from a lab. What's that? Cloning. Yeah, clone things. Although clone things, it's interesting.
They're still born.
Because they're still born. They're still born. Yeah, yes. And cloning is something, you know, Dolly the sheep and all that, etc. And there are shilas. We had a shiur on cloning not so long ago. Does a cloned person count for a minion? Okay, we'll have to see. Fine. Now, so let's leave some of these magical sources behind. They don't really get us terribly far because there are all sorts of questions on them. But let's get into the real halachic, you know, meat. Yeah, meat and potatoes of it. So there are three stages to how you make this meat. Stage one is you've got to get hold of the cells from the animals, number one. Number two, you've got to grow them. Put them in a growth medium and put them on this little 3D scaffold so that they can actually turn into something that looks like meat. And stage three is you add the preservatives and the flavorants and the colorants and the binding agents, etc. So stage three is nothing new. because that's just regular food technology, and we just need to make sure that the stuff that you're putting in is kosher. Okay, that's easy enough. No, nothing new there. But stage one and stage two are where really it's at. And I give you a kind of a health warning here. It's not really possible to come to absolutely clear halakhic conclusions yet, because the technology is still evolving. And the way that they're doing it today, when it's not yet in the market, is not necessarily the way they'll be doing it in 10 years when it is in the market. So everything we're saying today, you have to take your meat with a bit of a pinch of salt, okay, because it might have to change as we go through. But let's have a look at these stages and see how we get on. So stage one, let's turn to page five. We now we have to get some cells out of an animal. And the question is, are they kosher and are they meaty? So let's have a look. Page five, D1. The starter cells. So where are we going to get those cells from? This is fascinating science. I'm not a scientist. Some of you I know are. I do have a science background. I'm sure you'll find this interesting. There are five options, basically, as far as I could say. See, either they use what's called myosatellite cells, which are stem cells removed from a biomass of muscle tissue. They take a biopsy from the animal. They take a syringe and they pull out a little bit of meat from the animal's neck, usually, and that's their starter cells. That's what they use as their starter cells. That's option number one. Sometimes, as I said, they can bring them from special organs. They can take mammary cells from mammary glands to make milk, liver cells to make foie gras, but they usually take a meat cell to make meat. That's one option. Or they can take stem cells that they get from bone marrow, meaning they stimulate the bones to produce extra bone marrow, and then they take the bone marrow cells from the blood. Or they can take from non-edible parts of the animals. You can create chicken from a feather. You don't have to create it from the chicken legs. You can take feather cells and use them to create a chicken. Now that's interesting, okay? And the chicken doesn't look like a feather at the end. Or they take cells from an embryo, which are obviously very good at doing certain things, because embryo cells, they differentiate in different ways. Or they could take cells from a recently slaughtered animal. Just you shech the cow, take some of the cells, and use it to make your meat. Now, yes.
Do they just do it once and then keep growing it from that? Or do they have to take it?
I don't know.
Thousand animals.
I don't know. I don't know how long, how many times you can use the same. I don't know if it's like a starter when you're with your sourdough. You just need one sourdough and then you can use it and use it and use it and use it and use it. Or at a certain point they lose their vitality and you have to do it again. I just don't know the answer to that question. And also I suppose it depends on how many and how fast you need to produce them. They're going to be producing millions and millions and millions of these pieces of meat. So they're not going to be able to just use, they're going to have a mass production. So look, from our perspective, we'll turn around and say, okay, so the ideal from us is check the cow, which is kosher, check the kosher animal, check that it's glad, check that everything's fine, take a bit of meat, and use that. Shalom al Yisrael. But the answer is, they ain't going to do that. Why are they not going to do that? All sorts of reasons. Number one, the cells from a dead animal are not as good as the cells from a live animal. Number two, the whole point is they're marketing this as slaughter-free meat. People are not going to buy this because they're going to say, no animal died in order to produce this piece of, you know, food. And therefore, that's absolutely not going to happen. They're going to make them from live animals. So where does this leave us? So the first question we have is basar minachai. What is basar minachai? So you mentioned eva minachai, but there are two things. Look with me, number 13. I'm bringing you the tour. The tour is the halachic summary just before the level of the Shulchan Aruch, if you like. And he says as follows. He just summarizes it well. Pasuk saying, don't eat the nefesh, the life force, with the meat. That's a prohibition in the Torah of eva minachai. And eva is a limb. This applies to wild and domesticated animals and birds as well. But only to kosher animals. Technically, if you took a eva from a pig, that's not eva minachai. It's treif. It doesn't matter if it has meat and sinews on it, or bones, or if it's an organ, if it's a limb that doesn't have any bones, but only has flesh, halashon, the tongue, the tchul, the spleen, haklayot, the kidneys, habeitzim, the testicles of the animal, whatever. Asula achlam. These are all called eva min hachai. Bein im yesh bo kazayis. It doesn't matter if it's a tiny little eva, it's an eva. But then there's another thing. V'chein basar, even meat, ha-poresh min achai asur. Even if you just take meat without any, it's not a limb, it's got no bones, it's just a piece of meat, it's asur to eat. Afal pisha eimu mishum evecha minachai. It's a Torah prohibition, even though it's not eva minachai. Asur mishum a different pasuk. Basar basade treifa lo tuchelu. Do not eat meat that's been torn from the field. So you can't take meat from a live animal and eat it. It's very, very treif. So, of course, we're not doing that. We're taking microscopic cells from an animal and we're using them to make something else which was not taken from the animal. So are these microscopic cells called basar min hachai? So according to some views, well, no, they're not basar min hachai because they're just too small. It doesn't matter whether there's a kazayit or not. That's if you eat it. But to take something which is microscopic out of an animal, how can that have halachic significance? You can't see, we'll come in a minute to invisible things. And also, don't we have a principle with an embryo? Look at number 14. Amar of Chizda says, Ad Arba, and this is very important in the abortion discussion, until 40 days gestation, Maya Ba'alma Hi. And a developing human embryo is called Maya Ba'alma. It's just fluid. It's not a person. It's not basar. It's not anything. We're just maya. So if we're going to use this as, like, there's lots of cells inside a growing fetus, or at this stage an embryo, it's full of cells. But we don't call them meat. So are we going to take that over to the basar, in which case, it's fine. Don't worry about it. If it's a kosher animal, it's not going to be basar menachai. Or, and every single step of the way is going to be on the one hand, on the other hand, are we going to say no? This is talking about a human embryo. This is talking about a different situation. It cannot be applied here. Okay, fine. So what if we take cells from the hooves? Okay, that's okay. That's not basar menachai. From the hooves, from the horns, from the feathers, from the hair, we can use those. Okay, maybe that's a good idea. Would those be fleshik? Are the hooves of an animal fleshik? You ever ask yourself that question?
No.
Never ask yourself that question?
No.
Okay, so look, number 15. You can make soup and stuff out of them, no? Yeah? Let's have a look. Number 15. Says the Rambam, Hamavashel Shilia, all sorts of things that are probably not on your normal menu. If somebody cooks a placenta, or the skin of an animal, or gidin, or the sinews, that's samot, or the bones, ve'ikre karnaim, or the bottom of the horns, utzlafaim, or the hooves, harachim, which are soft enough for them to cook, b'chalav, and he cooks them in milk, patur. It's not fleishik. Patur. V'cheina oichlem patur, and if you even eat them, that's not eating milk and meat together. Okay? So maybe that's going to help us and say, look, if I grow meat from a hoof, so it's not fleishik. But maybe not, because a hoof looks like a hoof. But a burger grown from a hoof looks like a burger. So even if a hoof is not fleishik, maybe a burger produced from the cells of a hoof is fleishik. And therefore we're going to have to answer that question as well. Okay, let's move on. So over the page. So one way of looking at the starter cells is to say, I'm going to ask the question, are these starter cells meat? Are they meat? Are they not meat? If they're meat, is it basar menachai? We just raise those questions. Yes. Live animal. Yes, this is only with a live animal. Correct. Another alternative will say, you know something, they're not meat. They're not meat. How can you call this meat? They're what's called a yotzer. They're a derivative. So are they kosher or are they not kosher? So here we fall back on our general rule. Look at number 16. We've seen this a few times. Sheha yotzer min hatamei tamei, vayotzer min hatahor tahor. So here we'll be fine as long as you're taking them from a cow. This is assuming we say that these cells are not called meat. We don't have a problem with basar min hachai. Okay, so just don't take them from a pig. A stem cell from a pig is treif because it's a yotzer min hatamei, but a stem cell from a cow is kosher because it's a yotzer min hatahor. Okay, so that would be a good answer. So we'll just avoid cultivated pork and we will eat cultivated meat. We're going to have to ask a few more questions on that as well. It's not so straightforward, by the way, that what you're going to ask, okay, so is it fleishik or not? So good, it's kosher. Yotze mehatar. A stem cell from a cow is kosher. But is it fleishik? Well, I don't know. Are derivatives of a cow fleishik? Well, some are and some aren't. The meat's fleishik. An egg from a chicken is parav. And the milk from a cow is milchik. So I don't know, stuff that comes out of animals, sometimes it's fleishik, sometimes it's milchik, and sometimes it's para. So that doesn't necessarily answer our question if we treat it as a yotzer. Or you could turn around and say, you know something? I've got an even better solution. These cells are gornished. They're nothing. They're not even there. They're not halachically even relevant. Forget about meat. They're not meat, and they're not derivatives. They're not even there. Why would I say that? Because anything that's invisible is halachically irrelevant. But is that the case here? Let me give you some classic examples. Spots on an etrog. If you can't see a spot on an etrog, you don't need to go looking with a magnifying glass. Okay? If you have a bedikah cloth, where a shayla, a nida shayla, something which you can only see under a magnifying glass is not called there. If it's not there with the naked eye, then you don't have to make trouble. Letters in a Sefer Torah which are touching, but you can only see they're touching when you put a magnifying glass. It's fine. With a naked eye, they look as though they're not touching. It's fine. Classically, bugs on vegetables. You don't have to go looking with magnifying glasses. If you can't see them, they're not there. Fish who have scales, but you can only see the scales under a microscope. No good. You need to have scales that you can see with the naked eye. And I therefore want to bring you this Aruch HaShulchan. He's not the first person to talk about it. He's in the late 19th century. Already in the early 19th century, the Chochmas Adam talks about it. Number 17. Says the Aruch HaShulchan. Shamati. I heard. Shebechol minei maim. That in all kinds of water, or beyichud b'mei geshamim, especially in rain, malei bruim dakim. It's full of these tiny little creatures. She'ein ha'ayin yichala l'roizam. And not visible to the eye. U'beyaldoti. And when I was a small child, we're talking in the early to mid 1800s, shamati mipi echad shehaya b'merchakim. I heard from someone who came from a long way away, va'ara deris suchi, that he'd look through a glass, ha'megadelet, who through a magnifying glass, admaoid, through a really strong magnifying glass, that's what you and I call a microscope, and he can magnify many times. But my kol mini brum, and the water was full of microorganisms. Ulafiza ech anushosim maim. So how are we allowed to drink water? Ha'emed hu deloy asra Torah b'mashe ein ha'ayin sholetet ba. And the answer is the Torah never prohibited anything that you cannot see with the naked eye, because Judaism has to be workable in 2nd century Yemen, just like in 21st century Los Angeles. The loy nitna Torah lemalachim. The Torah wasn't given to malachim, to angels. De'im lo kein hari kama me'achokrim, because I'll tell you something else. Many of the scientists, kasu, they've written, shegam kol ha'aviru mali bruin dakim. The air's full of these tiny creatures. Dakim min ha'dakim. Because she'adam boseach piv, the minute you open your mouth, bolei kamehem, you're swallowing all these creatures. He says, but the af im kainu, even though that's the case, kivan de ein ha'ayin sholetet bahem, lo klumu, if the eye is not, can't see it, it's nothing, am nam, kama sha'ayin yacholirot, but if the eye can see it, afilu neged ha'shemesh, even only against the sun, afilu dak min adak, even if it's very small, then who sheretz koma, then it's a real sheretz. And this is a point which I think people often miss. I was once at an Esrog choosing place, and I was looking at Esrog, and I had a little magnifying glass. Some guy comes along to me and starts screaming at me, "You don't have to do that. You shouldn't be looking with a glass. My rabbi says it's not." Like, leave me alone. What am I doing? Like, you know, I'm just... And so I said to him, no, you don't understand. If you can't see it without a magnifying glass, you can ignore it. But if you can see it, you just don't know what it is. Then, according to many poskim, then you can use a magnifying glass. Meaning, I have a piece of lettuce and there's a little black dot there. It could be a piece of grit, a piece of dirt. It could be a little guy waving up at me. Okay? So then it's legit to take a magnifying glass and say, "What are you? Oh, you're a piece of grit? Okay, I don't care." But if you can't see it, don't go looking. But if you can see it, then you have to check. So anyway, he says that if you can't see, but a cell from an animal is tiny. The average size of one of these stem cells is around 12 micrometers. Okay? And the smallest thing you can see with a human eye is 100 micrometers. Okay, so you can't see them. So it's irrelevant. Come along, almost all the poskim and say, "Nah, this is not comparable. Something that you don't see, and you don't want to see, and you don't want to even know is there, and you don't even care about, so then you can ignore when it's invisible. But this, you may not be able to see it, but this is the whole point." Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva about genetic engineering and crossbreeding animals using genetic engineering. Now, crossbreeding animals is prohibited. He says, what if I crossbreed them genetically? So they ask him, well, is it okay because I can't see the genes that I'm splicing in? They're invisible. He says, no, of course it's not okay. It's okay when you can't see them and they're irrelevant. But where they're the main event, the fact that you know that they're there, you know that they're there, you want them to be there, you need them to be there, that's the reason you're doing it, of course that's called can see. And therefore, the idea of turning around and saying that these stem cells are not really there, you know, I can't see them, it's not really there, says that's just silly, you can't do that, and therefore they are really there. So where does that leave us? In terms of the stem cells, the best option that we're probably going to end up with is that if it's meat, then it's not basa min achai, let's say, because it's too small, it's not relevant, whatever. If it's not meat, then it's fine as long as you don't get it from a pig or a non-kosher species, but it is there. Okay, so that's still going to leave us some room to eat this cultivated meat. Yes, we'd like it in an ideal world if they took it from a shechted animal, and maybe there'll be a glat, you know, mahadrin min a mahadrin min a mahadrin version in 2050, that all our stem cells were taken from kosher glat animals shechted by, you know, holy rabbis or whatever it is. Good. I'm sure there'll be someone who gets into that market, but I'm not sure that you'll need it, and you'll be able to buy your regular heksha probably without it. So that's in terms of the stem cells. Fine. Yesh tikva. Let's go on now, but what about growing them? What's going on here? So in order to produce this, you need to grow them in the lab and on one of these scaffolds. So there are a few potential issues which come up here. Let's look at page number 7, E1. So back in the early days, and still to some degree, the medium that they were using to grow these cells was made from serum from calf blood, from embryo calf blood. Meaning, even if you tell me that you've managed to get cells which are halakhically kosher, for whatever reason, they stick them in a bowl of calf blood and grow them that way. Well, that's not going to do any good because the calf blood's treif. This is treif calf blood. And it's okay, it's cold, but it's all soaked there for 24 hours. So you're basically going to treif everything up straight away. So that's not going to be any good. Or do you say, no, this is not like soaking one thing in another. This is like an animal eating treif food. The purpose of this calf blood is to feed the cells. So if my cow eats treif food, doesn't make the cow treif. Okay, there's a shaila on Pesach. If the cow eats chometz, is the milk chometz stick? Okay, let's not go into that now. So maybe you're going to view this like growth medium as just the food that the cells are eating, in which case it's not going to be treif, but probably not. It's going to probably be treif, but this is not going to be a problem because they're working on synthetic media, and it's very unlikely they're going to end up using calf blood for the exact reason I said before. They don't want a product that is any way connected in any sense with dead animals, and therefore it's almost certainly not going to be an issue. They'll find something else which is vegetable, you know, origin, and then we're just going to have a shaila on Pesach. This meat was grown in chometz. Is it chometz or not? Okay, so we can work that one out. When we've run out of other things to talk about before Pesach, by the time we get to 2040, if we're still going before Pesach, so we'll give a shir on that. Okay, fine. New question. Let's say I decide that my starter cell was treif. I took it from a treif animal, or I took it in a way which we think is basa min achai, or something else went wrong with it. But that's going to be bottled, surely. That's going to be nullified, because I've got millions and millions, and we're talking millions and millions of cells, which I've now grown from this. They didn't come from basa min achai. They didn't come from a treif place. Let's say I find a way to grow cow burgers from pig cells. I'm not saying that you can do it, but I wouldn't put money on the fact that you can't do it. The fact that the original cell was from a pig, does that mean that the cells, the beef, quote unquote, cells now? So how does that work? So we're going to have to ask about bittul. Are you going to turn around and say the original cell is bottled in millions and millions and millions of cells, which are fine? So is this the same as the normal halachic bittul? Bittul normally means I take something which is kosher and I put it into something different. Or the other way around. I take something which is treif, and it ends up in something which is much bigger, which is kosher, but it's a different thing. Here, I've taken something which is treif and duplicated it. 2 treifs, 4 treifs, 8 treifs, 16 treifs, 1 million treifs, 10 million treifs. I'm just making more and more treif. So here, luckily, we have a great source. Look at number 19. The Gemara and the Mishnah talks about this a lot. What if you plant treif plants? Why would they be treif? They're tevel, or they're shvius, and so there's a problem eating them there after the beer, or they're truma. What if I plant truma seeds, and I grow truma plants? Are they all truma? Does it just reproduce its own status? So look at number 19. Hatevel, food which has not been tithed. I take seeds from food which has not been tithed. Gidulim mutarim b'davash zarokala. then anything that grows from that seed is kosher, as long as the original seed decomposes. Meaning, I take a seed of grain, okay, a grain, kernel or whatever, and I put it in the ground. Even if this piece of grain was tevel, which I'm not allowed to eat, and it's very treif, planted in the ground, since the grain rots away, when I pull the plants out, there's nothing left of the original grain. That's fine. However, aval, badava she'ein zarokala, where the original grain remains. We'll see examples in a minute. Gidulei ma'osrim, asurim. Even not only the things that grew from that, but the things that grew from 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 that are all asa. Ezeu dava she'ein zarokala, could go in haluf, the hashum, the habetzalim. Onions. You plant onions, the onions grow into onion plants, but the original onions are still there. So if the original thing is somewhere still there, then it doesn't matter that it's grown loads of new things which were not there before. Its status remains the same. So am I going to turn around and say that this starter cell was treif, and now there are a million starter cells, but it's still sitting there in the middle, and therefore it's all treif? Or am I going to say, it's not there anymore? I mean, it is technically there, but you'll never find it. So that's one question that comes up. And are we going to apply bittel? Bittel is a fascinating question. Normally speaking, if something which is prohibited is dropped into something which is permitted, then often it will be bottled. But there are exceptions. Let's just run through them for a second. Something which is called avidi lataima, I put there to make a special taste. That's not bottle. I wanted it there to make a taste. Something which was added for the specific purpose of nourishing the cell. Is that going to be called bottle? Is that going to work? Adava hamamid. We looked at this when we looked at cheese. If you can't see it, but you can detect it, meaning if I know that the rennet's there because all the cheese, all the milk curdled, I know it's that the consistency gives away the fact that it's there. So too here, I know that the original cell is there. And then there's all sorts of other issues of multiple different causes. Is it bittel itzel lachatchila? Meaning, yes, it's bottled, but you did it on purpose, so it doesn't help. And the shear that we gave many years ago, which we're due for a rerun of whiskey and sherry casks, that proved to be one of my most popular shearim. I get more questions on that shear online than any other shear. We asked all those questions. Yes, there's sherry taste in it, but they didn't put it in. It was non-Jews that put it in, and they put it in not for the Jews. And does it really taste of the sherry, or does it taste of the wood? And it's only the wood that's changed by the sherry, and it's not... All of these questions. So all of these questions are going to apply if we're going to say bittel. Is this going to work? And these and more questions will be relevant. You had a question, sir? Yes. 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 Correct. That's what we, correct. Oh, you're saying it's the beer, but it's not the same physical cell. It's lots of new cells which all came from the original cell, but it's not the same cell. It's new. They weren't there before. You've turned amino acids and whatever else, glucose and things, into cells. You've just caused them to go from state A to state B. They weren't there before. Yeah.
Interesting, but I can't see how this can take over the classic kosher meat market. People, if you're going to be paranoid, just to learn this, so many stricter, and the question is, what
right.
Is
You may be right. You may be right. I don't know if people are going to be paranoid. I suspect that people are going to say, you know something, I don't want to know. The rabbi says it's kosher. I follow the rabbi, and it costs half the price of the other stuff. I'm going to buy it. I suspect. I agree. We'll see. Someone's going to come to a conclusion. It's not going to be me. But Rav Asher Weiss is already on it. Don't worry. Don't worry. People will buy it. Jews will buy it if it's good value. Another thing which I want to mention, and we'll get to some conclusions, is this idea of panim chadashos. What's panim chadashos? So you'll say, it's all about sheva brochas. I'll say, no, it's got nothing to do with sheva brochas. Number 20. Here's a din in Geneva. Number 20, top of page 8. Amar Rav Papa. Hai man de gozel afra b'chavrei. Somebody steals dust from his friend. Dirt. But Avida Levinta, and he makes it into a brick. Loikani. He stole it, and he makes it. What's the deal here? If a Ganav steals something, but then significantly changes it, makes it into a new thing, so the Ganav now owns the thing and has to repay the money. If it's still the same original thing, he has to give back the original object. But if he's transformed it, converted, I think is the word in law, into something else, then he just gives the money back, not the original thing. So if you steal dirt and you make a brick, then that you give the brick back. Why? It's new. No. The hada mashvele afra, because you can easily turn it back into dirt. But levinte, if you steal a brick, va'avde afra, and you make it into dirt, kani, then you own it now. The ganaf owns the dirt. That's new. And he pays the money back. My timer. What's the reason? He could make it back into a brick. You could always make a new brick. No. Hai levinte achriti. This is a different brick. Upanim chadashais ba'u lakan. And this is panim chadashais. This is a totally new thing. It wasn't there in any way. Oh yeah, it's a brick which is made from the dust. Yeah, new brick is a new brick. Dust from a brick is not new. Brick from dust is yes new. And therefore quite a lot of people came along and said that whatever this meat is, it's panim chadashis. I don't even care where it came from. I don't care where it came from. I don't care what it's made from. I don't. It's just panim chadashis. It's completely new. Therefore you can't give it any of the designations of the old meat. That was very significant. If you look in number 22, I brought Rav Aviner. He puts here, the meat undergoes many changes to the point that its entire identity is different. This is the same as gelatin. He brings the comparison with gelatin from non-kosher animals. The bones undergo so many changes that the product is considered as an entirely new creation. While some authorities are strict about this, the basic halacha is that gelatin is kosher. Okay, so gelatin is complicated. I mean, he says this, don't, you know, get excited. We had a whole share about gelatin. Gelatin, of course, is a little bit different to this. Why? Because gelatin starts off edible, and then they pour hydrochloric acid on it, and they turn it into something which is absolutely not edible at all. I think hydrochloric and sulfuric. Reminds me of the whole H2O to H2SO4 kind of thing. You cannot eat it. You don't want to eat it in the middle. And then they make it kosher. They make it edible again. So that's gelatin. But this was never made inedible. Okay, maybe you don't want to eat a kind of growing mass of proto-beef cells. Maybe it doesn't feel appetizing, but it's edible. So maybe you can't compare it to gelatin. But maybe many of the early poskim on this actually did. I brought you some sources on that on the end. In fact, I'll mention to you, if you just turn for a second to the last page, we are going to go back to page 9. I just want to leave you with some conclusions that don't leave you all in the air. And then we'll talk for a second about Maris Ayin. By the way, most poskim say it doesn't need to be kashered. And everyone talked about that. Even if the original meat was not kashered, which of course it won't be, because you pour salt over a load of beef cells and they're not going to grow into anything because you've just destroyed them. It doesn't matter. The beef that comes out of it, for all sorts of reasons, probably will not need to be kashered because it doesn't have any halachic blood in it. That's a separate issue. But quite a lot of Rabbonim early days basically said the stuff is kosher and the stuff is parav, even if you got it from a pork cell. And this was the position of Rav Aviner. This is the position of Rav Sherlo, Rav Dov Lior. I brought you a video in the middle where, you know, a link to a YouTube video where they basically, you can watch all these smiley rabbis saying that it's all kosher. It's all parav, and it's all kosher. More recently, people have taken a slightly different view. Rav Asher Weiss thinks that it's a fleishik, and the OU have basically said it should be fleishik. Certainly on a Durabonon level, meaning for Maris Ayin. And I brought you some sources, which I'm not going to read inside on page 9, which talk about whether there should be a new Maris Ayin. And I brought you there, actually, which is a very important source, a Pri Chadash, that says that we don't create new Maris Ayins. Because Ein Ledav Asof. You think this is Maris Ayin, he thinks this is Maris Ayin, she thinks that's Maris Ayin. Chazal said these X number of things are Maris Ayin, meaning if somebody sees you, they're going to think that it's okay and they're going to make a mistake. You can't make up new ones. Not everyone agrees with that. I brought you Rav Avadya Yosef, who quotes from Rav Yonason Eibeshitz. He says, why didn't we say you can't cook meat in red wine? Because people might look at it and think it's blood. Oh, come on. You can't make stuff up like that. It's not really damn. Okay, you can't cook meat in fish blood. Yes. Even though it's fish blood. Leave aside meat and fish together. You know, you can't cook stuff in fish blood. Even fish in fish blood. okay? Because it looks like blood. That they said. Or using mother's milk, it looks like, because at least it's close to the thing. But this, you know, you can't make stuff up. Not everyone agrees with that, and I think meat that tastes like meat, looks like meat, at least at the beginning there'll be Maris Ayin issues, and some of the kashrus agencies say, you know, when it comes out you'll have to have the wrapper there or a sign saying this meat was made with da-da-da-da. But like you said before, after a while, people will get used to it, and probably they'll assume there'll come a point when all the meat probably is cultivated meat, and it's not an issue. Just one last thing I wanted to leave you with Rav Cook, like we started. We're not excited about fressing meat. I know we get excited about it, but we're not meant to be excited about it. Even when we were told that we have to eat meat, and don't forget, at the beginning we were vegetarian, Adam and Chava were vegetarian, they were given meat as a concession. Noach was given meat. There's an amazing piece by the Sefer Ikrim that says at the time of the flood, people were sleeping with the animals and killing the people. So God says to them, you know, do me a favor. You know, marry the people and kill the animals. It's a better option. So that was a concession at the time. Comes along Matan Torah, almost all the animals in the world are off the menu. Oh, you've got to eat kosher. And even when you have to eat meat, I saw this source, Rav Rimon brings this source down, even the Korban Pesach, which is the only meat that you have to eat if you're in Yerushalayim, it says, Ish lefi achlo. You eat what you have to, not over. You don't overeat on the meat because you only have to. And Rav Cook says at the end, he says, I cannot imagine a world, a utopian world that we daven for, Bimheiru v'yameinu, where the only way we can sustain the human meat, the human race, is by the spilling of the blood of billions of animals. Even though they're animals and they're not the same as people. And Rav Cook was nervous that the world should not become vegetarian yet. He was a vegetarian during the week, not on Shabbat. Many of his Talmidim became full vegetarians or even vegans. He was nervous that if we do it too soon, then rather than raising animals, if you like, to the level of people, we'll end up bringing people down to the level of animals. And you see that as a real concern. But nevertheless, he says, I cannot believe that when the ultimate utopian end comes, we'll have to spill the blood of animals. There must be an option that will not require us to do that. So in his day was to become a vegetarian. But now, that you don't even have to become a vegetarian. Maybe you'll be able to eat cultivated meat. I feel quite confident that in 20 years from now, this product will be on the market. It will be kosher and fleishik. That's my prediction. I think it'll be fleishik, at least for most things. Yes.
What's a Rav Asher Weiss source?
Rav Asher Weiss, I brought down. It was from
Is it written here?
I'm not sure. I'll be able to send it to you. Rav Yol Konigsberg wrote an article on it, and he spoke to Rav Asher Weiss and quoted him. But he's the kind of person that's going to ultimately decide how this works. Yes.
I thought Basar V'Yayin on Yom Tov is required.
Good, but that's Korbanos. That's Korbanos. And it's a mitzvah. But it's not a chiyuv. You don't have to have Basar V'Yayin on Yom Tov. You have to eat Korbanos if you're in Yerushalayim. But plenty of people have their Yom Tov without. You don't have to. Okay, let's leave it there because it's already over time. I'm sorry again, we're upstairs. Next week, normal service. There will be a shir next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. There's no p'tur from Talmud Torah at 10 o'clock on Erev Tisha B'Av. We'll talk about a Tisha B'Av issue. And then after Tisha B'Av, we'll move on to food-free questions. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, I'll be here next week. I'll be here, please God.